You're listening to the Technology Equals Equality podcast. This is episode 26. Hey, welcome back to the Technology Equals Equality podcast. I'm your host, Lori Brooks, and this is episode 26. I am super pleased to welcome to the show today, Tiffany C. Wright. Tiffany is the author of a new book called The Funding Is Out There: Access the Cash You Need to Impact Your Business. Whether you've got a $300,000 transportation business or a $20 million business services company, or are an aspiring entrepreneur considering your options, Tiffany C. Wright has the information and strategies for getting your business needs financed. She has helped numerous small and medium businesses find funding for a variety of purposes from many sources, but today, Tiffany Wright will talk to us about her startup journey and how you too can begin generating the business financing you need to grow and achieve your business goals. Tiffany, welcome and thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm excellent, thanks. Super excited to have you on the show today. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Certainly. Tell us the story of how you once saw the future before you decided to begin branding yourself and building out your business.
I saw the future. With my real estate investment business, I really saw the future, and I took significant action based on that future, which was selling all my properties before the meltdown. But with this, the future that I saw was just where I would like my company to go, and how many people I could help. I didn't have any visions of technological dominancy or anything like that, any new developments in the market. It was just that I had focused on a smaller number of businesses because we provided interim C-level services. And yep, we wanted to get off the road, meaning that we were continually having to move to service these customers on, or these clients on, 3 months to a year and a half long projects or engagements. And what I saw was that there's this need by all these other companies for our services. And so what's the best way to do that? And I decided that the best way to do that was to go online. And so so I thought, okay, Toka Family Business Services is our interim firm, and my partner was actually looking at retiring and didn't want to be involved in the new venture online. So I said, okay, well, we need to brand ourselves, because if we're going online, word of mouth doesn't work so well without a catchy name. And so I started to think about what would be the name. And I know that we were often very resourceful. So I sat down, and that's what I often said, was you need to tap into your resources, which as a business owner, a small business owner, you tend to think is limited, but it's not. And right. So I sat down with a PR friend of mine, and we were talking, and I kept saying resourceful. And she said, the resourceful, oh, you can be the resourceful COO. And I said, well, that sounds good, but I like the resourceful CEO. So that is the way that we looked ahead to the future, in a way, basically a future of serving more customers over a much wider geographic area, and then needing to brand in order to be recognized and people know what the heck we do, at least to some degree, right?
Definitely. I love that, Tiffany. And I'm just going to recap for the audience. because you really put a lot. There were so many nuggets in that couple of seconds there. Really, what you did was you looked at the services that you were already providing to your clients, and you knew that you could help more. So you looked towards technology and the internet in order to help a wider range of individuals. And, you know, while brainstorming on how to work through this, one of your colleagues actually kind of popped out the question that, you know, you use resources so much, and that's how you branded yourself as the resourceful CEO. And I absolutely love that because, you know, oftentimes entrepreneurs tell the story of how they came up with the name all by themselves, you know, doing one thing or another, but it's really great to hear that, you know, you even used feedback just from colleagues and from outside to help you with creating that catchy and the catchy name to become one of your branding points. I love that.
Yes, inspiration comes from everywhere. I just read online about a woman who had started a t-shirt business, and she, with inspirational saving, I mean savings, inspirational sayings.
Yes.
And she saw a yoga instructor at either at the gym or just out. And she had a t-shirt with the inspirational saying on it. And she thought, oh, instead of targeting everyone, I should target yoga studios with my inspirational sayings. And so she went online and found, I guess she did Google searches and so on, and found comprised a list of 3,000 yoga studios. And that's who she targeted with her t-shirts. So again, inspiration comes from anywhere. You just have to be open. So if you need an answer, you're saying, oh, I need an answer. I'm trying to figure out what to do with my business, where to go, what options are available to me, what technological tools, just throw it out there and then you'll get inspiration. It will answer your question.
Definitely. So once you decided, okay, resourceful CEO, that's what we're going with, what were some of the first steps that you took, you know, to begin branding yourself and moving forward?
Well, we were still providing interim services. So what we did before officially forming the Resourceful CEO was we said TOCA Family Business Services, DBA, the Resourceful CEO. Then later I had the Resourceful CEO trademarked a few months later. But also but trademarking is not branding. It's a component, but who cares if you have a trademark if no one knows who you are? So what I also did was I began branding myself in a way as an expert by writing articles for several different online business publications, just on small business, mainly on small business topics, some personal finances, primarily small business topics. Just this wide range of anything to do with small businesses. And and that was, again, to establish myself as an expert in, you know, so if you go to search for me, you can find me. I also put my profile on Google Plus and associated my articles with these particular publications. You can do that on Google Plus. Then I wrote a book. I had already, somewhere in there, I said, I need to write a book. And I didn't think of it as branding. I really thought of it as one of the overarching questions that we get have to do with financing and an inability to find it. So that is what motivated that particular book, or this particular book, The Funding Is Out There. And so I did that, and that was I finished it and submitted it to the publisher in January of 2014. January of 2014, and it was published in October of 2014. So those are the actual conscious steps that I took to brand, and then I began doing some press releases in advance of actually starting the business, launching the business in January, but all of that was maybe about a 2-year lead up. I don't, again, I don't think that's necessary for everyone, but because we were transitioning, that was the perfect pace for us.
Right.
And for me.
Right. I love that. You took the time to really build yourself up as an authority figure in your niche by looking at, you know, different ways you could create articles and different pieces of content to build out your social media platform that then really assisted in establishing yourself when the book was then published that, you know, you were able to really kind of launch full force. So, A, congrats on the book. That is absolutely awesome. And I will definitely be sure to link to that through the show notes page. Again, that is The Funding Is Out There, and that was published October of 2014. So definitely we'll include links. But what do you feel was one of the most difficult parts of getting started, getting yourself out there, beginning to brand and you know, making those strategic choices as to how you were going to begin?
Well, I am much more of a buy a business person, which is what I still intend to do. My intention is to build a holding company with multiple businesses that I buy, grow, and sell. But I thought there was a need in the market. There's a definite need in the market for the services that the Resourceful CEO offers. So, for me, what was hard was the whole startup thing. When you buy a business, you have an existing infrastructure, employees, relationships already in existence. And what my skill set is taking something and making it better, growing it faster, making it stronger, hiring more people, and so on. It is not starting from scratch and have to figure every single thing out alone and then add people as I figure each thing out. Give me some kind of base. I can do that, no problem. But starting from absolute scratch, for me, that was very difficult. So that was the hardest thing was starting from scratch and building.
Definitely. Really formulating that idea, then actually growing it out, beginning to look at how it really would fit into your goals and you know, intentions, while building on the business itself. So that can be really difficult to kind of, you know, keep yourself in line with what it is you're looking to do, listen to the audience and make sure that you're serving, but also, you know, kind of create this thing from absolutely nothing.
And Lori, I want to say one of the things that, or the primary thing that the Resourceful CEO focuses on is working with small business owners without a senior management team that are struggling to build a sustainable business that runs well without them. And so when we work with the company, when I work with these companies, these business owners, we build infrastructure and help them access any needed funding. So therefore, the Resourceful CEO, I'm having, again, we work with existing businesses to help them get to the next level, but that is essentially what I am doing with the Resourceful CEO as a startup, building infrastructure and then accessing needed funding. But building infrastructure is the part, but I'm building it from scratch.
Gotcha, definitely. How do you feel that you have overcome the sticking point of really kind of looking at that idea from infancy and building it into something? What do you feel really helped you in making those choices, and how do you feel like you overcame it, if you did at this point?
Actually, for me, it was much more mental. So I honestly turned to more of the, what is that, Law of Attraction books?
Yes.
It was... Because I kept saying I don't build companies from scratch. I don't start companies. Right. I buy companies. I buy. But and so I was looking for companies to buy and then put the resourceful CEO on top, and it just wasn't feeling right. And so I said, Well, what's the problem? And then I realized that it's because I had so much resistance to starting a business. So I finally just said, okay, I'm going to start the resourceful CEO. I'm going to incorporate or organize it as an LLC and launch. And then I felt much better. So I realized that that was the decision that I needed to make. But yes, it took me, I'd say, about 6 months to finally decide to launch the resourceful CEO as a startup.
I love that, because listening to your gut is so key when it comes to starting your business.
Yes.
It truly is. Knowing what it is that you honestly are going to be comfortable doing. And sometimes that uncomfortable push from your gut is telling you, maybe you should explore that a little bit more. Kind of look at that direction a little bit better and see why it is you might have that resistance to it. You know, it's funny, when I was thinking about starting this podcast, it was kind of something that was just kicking around in my head. And, you know, I was listening to a ton of podcasts, but it was something that I was like, I don't really want to do that. And the number of times I recorded episodes and deleted, you know, every introduction episode, I don't know how many times I recorded that over before I was finally like, okay, forget it. I just have to put it up and get it done. Because it gets to a point where you have to kind of take a step back and say, all right, I can't continually rehash what it is I've done over and over again. And you kind of need to begin making those steps to move forward. But what do you find are some of the key metrics that a newbie should really focus on when they're performing their market research?
What you need to look at is your competitors when you're performing market research. How competitive is your market? And please don't say, I have no competitors. I hear that all the time. And then when you get squashed, you don't understand why, because you thought you had no competitors. You always have a competitor. Yes. For instance, Siebel Systems, whom I previously worked for, provided CRM. The CRM was new. But the competitor to the CRM was all these in-house systems that large corporations built to handle their customer interactions. But that was a competitor, because you had to convince the companies to throw those out and bring in your new software.
And make that transition.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. So that's the first thing I would say is look at the competition in your market and determine where you have either less competition or where you have a strong value proposition that could really blow away the competition. Because one thing you don't want to do is compete on price. You want to compete on value. So you need to look at what kind of gross margins you will receive. So in order for your business to be profitable, obviously you need to generate a profit. But going up the income statement, you need to first generate enough gross profit to cover your overhead. And so many businesses are thinking about bringing in new customers, especially new businesses, that they're not thinking about the value of that customer. And the value of that customer is how much they contribute to your overhead. So if you have really strong margins, then those customers are more valuable to you than when your margins are horrible. And you can look up the industry statistics for your gross margins. Just do a Google search and you will find general information on gross margins for your industry. So that, too, cash flow is 3. And actually, I would say cash flow is more important than anything. You often hear tech companies talking about we're cash flow positive, which means that they're not profitable yet, because they have all of these costs that they've incurred in building to that point, but they're now generating enough operational cash flow, so cash flow from their ongoing operations to cover all of their expenses. And so they're not having to use up any money that they raised to cover those expenses. So that's why cash flow is so important. You can be, if you structure your receivables and so on, or the way that you bring in money, such that you're not paid until 60 or 90 days after you sell your service, you could go out of business. That happens a lot. You need to make sure that you have more cash coming in than going out in any given week. So cash, cash, cash. So those are the things that I would say that you need to look at and when you're starting your business. And then think about your particular business, because each business, so if you're in IT, your metrics are going to be different than if you're in construction or if you're in delivering software as a service. So look at the metrics that apply to your type of company, and then focus on those. Just take four or five and focus on driving those to build a viable, strong business.
I love that, and I'm just going to go ahead and once again recap, Tiffany, because you were so awesome, and you packed so much into every answer. I love it. But for the audience, definitely. So you have to make sure, as she said, pay attention to your cash flow. Don't have a negative cash flow. If you have more going out than you have coming in, there's a problem, and you really need to focus and fix that. And then you need to really focus on the value proposition that you're proposing to your clients. Make sure that what you have versus your competitors is really something that's going to be of value to your customers. And really looking at your own business and making sure you know which metrics are important for your particular business, because every entrepreneurial journey is absolutely different. So look at those things that are income generating opportunities or income generating activities and make sure you focus there. So do you feel that there is either a limit, either minimum or maximum, to the amount of research that a newbie should really be performing when they are about to go ahead and launch their first product or their first business?
Yes, I definitely think there's a minimum and a maximum, because the maximum has to do with analysis paralysis. You can delve and dig and whatnot, and then you just have to stop. Who cares? You've answered your questions. You need to determine your metrics, determine who's the largest competitors in your market, determine how they're going after the market, know what your value proposition is, truly what your value proposition is, not just we provide services. Who cares that you provide services? What are you going to do for me? And don't focus on the how. It's what. What are you going to do for me? How am I going to benefit? So you need to do research in order to determine that, like what resonates well with people. Some things that you say just kind of fall flat, and other things that you say people really pick up on. So some of it is actual research on the internet, calling people, talking to people. I often tell people to take a look at 10Ks of public companies in your industry. You'll have a whole wealth of information in there that that you wouldn't have access to otherwise. You can just do research looking at their competitive risk factors and threats. You get a lot of information from there. And you can call up companies if you are in a particular geographic area. You can call up a company in another geographic area that would not be a competitor and just talk to them. You can pretend to be a customer and check out your – I mean, don't lie. Don't do anything unethical. But people do it all the time. It's called market research. Banks go visit. My brother was just hired by another bank because that bank came to his bank while he was working to just check on how they handled their customer service, and they were really impressed with his business banking skills. So People do it all the time. You do
right.
it. You do it. Yeah. And it doesn't need to take that long. You just prepare a questionnaire and you call people up. But yes, so I say you need to do enough to be able to determine what the market needs are, who your competitors are, and just to be enough to be able to sketch out your market, your products and services, your market strategy, and just an overview of your market. That's something that you would put into an executive summary. So once you can write that up, then you're finished. I don't mean, and I'm talking about total. Everything is about 3 to 5 pages, including a cover page. So, so just enough to have a few paragraphs. And then, you know, because your business is an ongoing, living, breathing entity, and things will change. So if you spend too much time focusing on not just the what, but the how, then if you get market information as you're out in the market delivering your services and your products, it's going to be hard for you to make the change and shift because you have spent all this time detailing the how that
Definitely.
you're married to it. Now you have to get a divorce.
Undoubtedly, it's definitely, time is something that we can't get back. Time is what it is. It's precious. And every minute you spend on something that's not worth spending the time on can be daunting. And just to recap, realistically, there is, you know, like you were saying, a minimum and a maximum. You have to do enough research to understand your market's needs and who those competitors are so that you have the strategy and a really good overview of the market as a whole. But once you understand what it is that resonates well with your audience, don't allow the analysis paralysis to make you freeze. Just keep it moving. Begin getting your stuff out there so you can get that feedback even more so that if you need to pivot, you can do so. So, excellent.
I like
Tiffany.
Pivot, that's the word.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, yes, definitely. So how do you feel that technology has helped you in streamlining the procedures in your business?
Well, it has. Without technology, well, without the internet, the resourceful CEO wouldn't be possible. That's the whole premise of being able to reach thousands of people germinated from being able to do so, or excuse me, tens of thousands of people being able to do so over the internet. I would have had to form, I guess, what, some kind of catalog or I'm trying to think before the internet, some kind of
right.
mail marketing entity,
yeah.
or
radio. Broadcasting,
yeah, studio or... broadcasting, something like the Tony Robbins organization where you do events all over the country or the world. And
right.
that, so I wouldn't have done it because that's not what I wanted to do.
Right.
So in terms of facilitating it, it's wireless access because I can essentially work from anywhere. Webcams because I record instructional videos. We have a membership site, and we used a plug-in and a particular theme because we use WordPress as our base.
Yeah.
We use Google Chats and Skype. And just email. We currently use GetResponse as our autoresponder. We had used AWeber. There's what Infusion Soft. There's all these things out in the market. There's Constant Contact. We don't use them, but there's all these entities to help you do email marketing. And we use a CRM system to better track people who come in directly to us from referrals and phone calls and so on. So all of this makes it so much easier to run the business and to put in the infrastructure and then have that infrastructure operate smoothly. So basically automating all the technology has it allows me to automate the business and to run my business largely virtually.
Definitely. And with that being said, do you feel like there's a favorite tip or a favorite app or a go-to piece that you use on a regular basis daily in your business that you could share with the audience?
Well, my most recent one are those share buttons, the share buttons that you now can put on your website.
Yes.
Those, and I will say, I'm trying to think which one. I've used a few. And so the one that I love the most, I'm sorry, I forget the name because I tried 5 or 6 of them. But yes, the share buttons, because before I had to look them all up and right. bookmark them or have my marketing person bookmark them and share each time.
Right.
Now you just hit share and it does it automatically. So now instead of taking like 30 minutes or so,
yep.
it only takes like 5. Huge.
Right.
Huge when you're putting out a lot of content.
Definitely. I know exactly what you mean. It's not easy to keep up with marketing content on a regular basis without those apps. So I totally understand. I use a number of the social share buttons on the browser. So definitely excellent. And I'll be sure to put a link to, you know, where people can find a couple of those share buttons on the show notes page. So thank you. What would you caution as being one of the biggest mistakes you find first-time entrepreneurs tend to make?
The biggest mistake is, as I brought up before, is cash flow.
Yeah,
that is the biggest mistake. And you read about the business failure rate and so on. And it's some of this is necessary because not every business was meant to be successful. And many successful entrepreneurs out there had 1, 2, or even 3 failed businesses before they found the business or they started the business that actually grew, that they were able to grow. And they learned, the thing was that they learned from those failures. But for those companies that actually would do very well from the beginning, what I have often seen the problem is that they just don't structure the way that they bring in revenue in such a way that they generate positive cash flow. And by the time they realize this, they don't have the money to pay their bills, because that's the thing about cash flow is you don't have it, you can't pay your bills, and your creditors will shut you down.
Right.
You can be unprofitable, but if you structured it that your cash comes in, even though you're running, you're somewhat unprofitable, or you have access to all this cash, like startups, a lot of technology startups, that have raised money, they're unprofitable. Some of them are unprofitable for a few years, but they raised money because they anticipated that. And so they have right. financing cash flow that covers their operational cash flow losses. So for those of you out there, if you need to really look at how much money your company, your business will need to run and think about your sources of cash. And if you think you can cover it from your company activities, then do so and make sure you get your payments from your customers earlier rather than later. You need to get your payment from your customers in advance as a prepay, a deposit, or a proportional prepay, or within the first 10 days, offer special terms or something to get them to pay within 10 days, because again, if you're going out 45, 60, 90 days, you're spending all this money in the first 10 days to deliver the product or the service, but you're not getting it for weeks or months later. That's the problem. So that's what I always stress. Cash flow. I know I can go on and on about cash. bad flow. Just trying to really drill it into people's head, because it's always, always, always a big problem whenever I speak to people. So
yeah. No, it definitely is. It is cash flow, cash flow, cash flow. If you do not have positive cash flow, it is still a hobby. It's a hobby. You're not getting anywhere with it if you know, and eventually it's going to be a situation where it's no longer a hobby and something you can no longer do. Like Tiffany said, you will get shut down if you don't have positive cash flow. It just doesn't work like that.
Yes.
Like that commercial says, it's not how it works.
And
it's just not how this works.
That's right. And I also want to say that I have seen businesses grow significantly. I had a friend who was a interim CFO who worked for a company that had grown to over 100 million within 5 years. But when the economy tanked and they weren't constantly bringing on new customers, the business almost went out of business within 3 months. Because they had receivables that were 120 to 180 days out. And what happened was every time they brought in a new customer, the new customer had a deposit. And so they were operating off of those deposits. But when those deposits went away, their lack of bringing in cash from existing customers caught up with them. So it can happen at any stage, but the younger you are in your business, the more strongly you feel it.
And again, there's no such thing as failure per se. There's only feedback. As long as you learn from whatever it is that you've done, as long as you learn from it, it's feedback. But definitely, Tiffany, I absolutely love every bit of information that you have shared on the show today. I can't wait to summarize and throw this on the show notes page. But the show is really designed to help entrepreneurs come up with ideas for new innovative companies to help solve the pain in an industry that they may not have thought of. So I'd love to help you as the resourceful CEO. If you had a magic wand and could change anything at all in your business, what would it be and why? I like that answer. That was good.
It would be that I had a marketer as either a top employee or a partner or something like that, a marketer. My previous company, my partner was a salesperson / marketing person, but her skill set is not the internet. But she really helped us drive the company forward from a marketing and get the word out perspective. So that would be it, because that is what I like the least. And so I have struggled to find those entities that really, or individuals who really helped me drive the company. So that would be it. If you could wave a magic wand, it would be, give me my perfect marketing person or company. online driven marketing company.
All right, we're going to wave the magic wand, and someone in this audience is going to be a master marketer, and they are going to reach out to you very, very soon.
Okay.
Oh, but Tiffany, you have been awesome. Thank you, thank you, thank you for your time this morning. I truly enjoyed this conversation. Please share the best way for our listeners to find you.
Okay, they can find me at The Resourceful CEO. That's theresourcefulceo.com. Or take a look at the funding is out there. Access the cash you need to impact your business. And that's the book that I wrote. That's at www.thefundingisoutthere.com. Through both of those sites, you can contact me through the contact page or give us a call on our 866 number.
Tiffany, thank you, thank you, thank you. I truly enjoyed this. Have an awesome day. And
to my listeners, thank you once again for joining me here for another exciting episode of the Technology Equals Equality podcast. If you got nothing else from this episode, make sure that you always have more coming in than going out on any given week, whether that's in business or just in life. Make sure you have more coming in than you have going out. It's just kind of one of those things that should be known, business or life. If there's more coming in than going out, good. All right. So until our next episode, please don't forget to reach out to Tiffany Wright at theresourcefulceo.com. You can always reach her through our show notes page at technologyequality.com/Tiffany Wright. Again, thank you, thank you. And until our next episode, when we continue to hear the journey, find the pain, and create solutions, enjoy the week.